What are things that suck joy out of life?
Laundry.
Oh, laundry. That, you know, I mean, that's, I can't even write. I'm laughing too much. Oh, that was brilliant. Thank you.
Whining.
Whining. Is that by you or someone else? Grumpy people. That can really suck the joy out, right? Grumpy people. What else? This is not working out the way I envisioned. Right now, my answer might be this congregation. It's like, this isn't working for me. Oh, man, this is awesome. Hypocrisy. What else? Keep it coming. Yes. Double sermon. It really can suck the joy out of life. All right. Yes. Lack of sleep and what else? Hate? Hate. When people hate you. Oh, both ways, you're saying? Oh, wow. There's a big one. I'm just going to say death of loved ones. Illness. Okay. I think we're getting real now. Leslie's disobedient children, higher or lower on the list compared to laundry? That's awesome. Okay. Unforgiveness. All right. Anything else? What was that? Oh, face masks. All right. See, the thing about when you start making lists is it gets your mind going, right? And you start thinking about a lot of things. And I'm sure there's a lot of things we haven't expressed in this list today. But what I wanted to do is just take a look at this. And some of the things you might say, yep, that's me. But how many you could say, hey, there's at least 3, 4, 5 things that definitely I would say, yep, that sucks joy from life, right? Now, I made 2 lists here, even though it's 1 and I probably didn't get it all perfectly done. But I want us to take a look at something, and that is this. There are things that happen in our lives that happen to us. Our kids are disrespectful. They're disobedient. They wear clothes and they want us to wash it, right? These things happen to us. Because you do have a choice on that, Leslie. You do realize you have these things that happen from the outside. And things that are going to be flying at you and they want to suck joy from your life. And guess what? Is there anybody that doesn't have things like this flying at you in life? Everybody is involved in these things that suck joy from our lives. Everybody. Nobody gets excluded from that. Nobody's walking on the earth saying, I've never had anybody do any of these things. None of these things have come my way because we all wear clothes and we do laundry. So we have these things going on in our lives that are coming at us. So how do we deal with the things that are coming at us? And then we get to the second list, which could be a lot longer. If we're thinking of things in your own life, what do you do that sucks joy from your life? You know, we can be talking about things of the past. We can be talking about sins that we've done or sins that we've committed or maybe that we're still dealing with. Our hatred, our judgmental nature, we're being critical, we're whining, we're complaining, right? So those things are basically what are we doing in our own lives that are creating these problems ourselves? And I think that when we really talk about choosing joy, we have to really think about 2 different things because there are things that happen to us. You can't control any of that. It's going to happen, and it happens to everybody. And then there are things that you and I do that suck joy from life because we engage in it. I'm being negative, right? I'm not thinking in good ways. I'm being unthankful, unholy. There's things that take joy from our lives because we're engaged in behaviors that are not where we want to do, and we're doing things we don't want to do that are not in line with God. Now, when you think about life and the way you see it, how did you learn how to react to things? See, one of the things that's interesting about joy versus happiness is, I mean, we can get happy over the simplest of things, right? It doesn't necessarily take a lot of things happening from the outside world that can make you happy in a moment. Oh, somebody brought me something. That was very thoughtful. And that all of a sudden it makes you happy, right? You brought me a coffee back. That's really nice. I'm so happy that you did that. There are things that make us happy in life. But sometimes we think happiness and joy are exactly the same things. And yet when we look in the scriptures about joy, it's actually possible to be in a place of joy when you're unhappy. Once you think about even the life of Jesus Christ, on the night in which he was betrayed, he's talking to his disciples about joy in his prayer. John 17, right? He's talking about joy. John 16, John 15. He's there with joy, but right after that, he's talking about how deeply sorrowful he was. But yet it says in Hebrews 12:2, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. There's something that Jesus had and that Jesus wants us to have when it comes to joy that is so much deeper than the momentary happinesses that can come to life. And sometimes what happens is when we confuse joy and happiness, it's like we just need to be joyful about that. But sometimes the things that happen that are thrown at us in life, the death of a loved one would be a great example. There is a sorrow that comes. Even when you know of the resurrection of the dead, don't you still cry and lament death? But yet we know Jesus is going to resurrect. We know that there is a hope. We know that it's there. You can have a joy for what is coming for that person. And when you have the hope to see them again in the resurrection of the dead, and yet we can sorrow and mourn and hurt at the same time. Sometimes we confuse the happinesses of life and think that what real joy is just trying to be happy through every circumstance. But if anyone is being honest about the death of a loved one, if you had any care for that person and you've suffered the loss of that relationship, that would be unnatural. Even Jesus himself, when he knew he was going to resurrect Lazarus and he's going there with the people crying, what did he do? It says Jesus wept. He knew he was going to resurrect him. He said, I'm glad I didn't go. I'm glad I wasn't there because I want you to believe. But when he gets there and he's identifying with the people, he's weeping. And then he raises them up. A kind of a quandary, isn't it? In the way that joy and happiness and the things that can go on in our lives and how we come to have this joy in us. I want you to think about this in terms of, first, our approach to it. I'll just remind you of James chapter 1 and verse 2. In James chapter 1 and verse 2, if you want to turn there with me, you can. But it says, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Count it all joy. Why would you count it all joy? I mean, consider it a joyful thing that you fell into a trial. He says, knowing this, that the testing of your faith produces patience, let patience have its perfect work that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So that's a foresight, right? You go through painful things. My friend Bryson there in the back. Bryson has been working out. He has a desire to do something that his father did. He set a goal for himself. He's marching toward it. The way he eats and the way he lifts weights, his bicep is bigger than my whole body. So, I mean, there's things that are happening in Bryson that are just, it's like, wow, dude. But he pays a price of pain, basically, to get to a point of something that he wants to achieve. And what he does is for the goal and the joy set before him, he starts enduring what he's going to go through. Because he believes that there is a result at the end that he wants to hit, that he can. Now, when we are trying to be chiseled into the perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, it doesn't happen without suffering. Do you know at the end of the book of Luke, Luke said when Jesus was taken through the scriptures, it was being proven and it was being shown that the Christ must suffer. Must suffer. The one who was without sin, he had to suffer and then be resurrected. The whole point of the process of what Jesus was learning and what he was setting example for us is to have an understanding that through the things of life, through the pains, through the trials, through the things that are thrown at us, there is a great working together of a perfection that can happen when we count it as all joy And why is joy so important? Because joy is simply a statement that through the trials you face in your life, you actually believe there is a God who is bigger than your trial, and there is a God who loves you more. Nothing can separate you from the love of God. Not persecution, not distress, not trials, not tribulations, not famine, not peril, not sword. Nothing can separate you from the love of God. And when you say, God, I'm counting it as a joy because of what you will do through this in my life, you are saying, I believe in you. But more than I just believe in you existing, I believe in you. I believe in your love. I believe in who you are. And in that I have my joy. In that I have my thanksgiving. In that I have my righteousness. In that I have my everything. See, we learn in our world to look at things in a way. And it's not necessarily the way of God, because in order for us to deal with this and count it as joy, we have to see it through the eyes of God. We have to see it through the lens of who He is. And if we try to start evaluating life without God in it, well, yeah, we're going to whine and complain and judge and have fear and have bitterness and have resentment. And we will be going through all these things that come out in our lives. And then we start going around because of our trials. And we're like, well, I got really hurt when this happened. I'm really upset that this happened. Okay, let me take it out on you now. Right? Isn't that what we humanly do? We pass the pain. We pass the hurt. We pass the wounds. We pass the sins of others that they come upon us, and we just start passing them on. And now what we think might give us some relief actually only makes us feel worse. And it hurts somebody else now too. Something so powerful in what joy really explains, because it is a fruit of a relationship that is deeper than just something that happened to us. Turn with me over to 1 Peter 4. I asked the question, does anybody not go through this? And I want you to notice something that says here in 1 Peter 4 and in verse 12. He says this, beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. Do you ever find that in yourself or in somebody else? It's like, these things are going to happen. Why do we find it odd? Right? And I do it to myself all the time. Like, I am my own biggest, like, David, why do you think that's odd? Why do you think that's strange? Why do you think this is only happening to you? Why do you feel like this thing that you're experiencing is just... this is actually supposed to happen. Part of faith is saying, I already know the trials are coming. So see, I'm trying to wreck your surprise. You know, spoiler alert, trials are coming, right? Spoiler alert, you might still be carrying trials from your past. See, that's the other thing. We can talk about counting it all joy when you're going through trials. The question though you have to ask later on is the trial still trying me? Or is it now to a place of joy? We count it strange. Well, my father left home when I was 9 years old. And I can tell you that when he left at 9 years old, it was an immediate trial. And it was at 9 and at 10 and 11 and 12. Dad wasn't coming back. Dad wasn't there at night. Felt awful. Mom was now hurting, depressed, sick, in and out of hospitals. And I would flip back and forth with my grandma watching me or go to my dad's house or back at home. And it was just a time where it was just trying. The whole thing was just trying. I mean, Joanne's story is so beautiful, just talking about the trying experiences of life. But 10 years later, oh, yeah, it was still trying me. 10 years later, it was still a problem. 15 years later, it's becoming less of a problem. But the reality was it still is a trial. It still was a trial. And sometimes we have trials and things that hit us in our lives. And the reality is it's coming with us and it might not have that constant reminder. See, my dad not being there was a constant reminder. My dad and the issues that he had with his five children, that was a reminder, like how everybody's relationship with him was changed and how everything was just different and how it was with mom and all those things. But it was a constant reminder. But sometimes we have things that happen to us where somebody sins against us. It's a stranger, maybe somebody that is in our past, but we're still letting it try us today because we're still upset about it. We're still feeling the trial of it. We're still carrying the trial on. We haven't yet learned to count it as joy and let the patience of going through that trial have its perfect work. And it comes out of us in all different forms of ways, because what in the essence of it is that the faith that refines us, that makes us righteous, that sets us free, that allows us to forgive, is still shaping us in a different way. You see, the reality of a trial is it can shape you in many different ways, depending on how you treat it. I just think about the reality that the children of Israel were brought through the Red Sea. They saw the hand of God. They get on the other side, no water, no food. What did they do? Was that a wine? Jesus is in a desert with hungry people, 5,000 men plus women and children. What did he do? He thanked God. Now, wait a second. Wasn't the problem, in a sense, the same? There was a lack. Wasn't the problem there wasn't enough food? There wasn't provision for the people. The problem is the same. Why did the Israelites complain and Jesus give thanks? See, if you will just meditate on that thought, this sermon will have been completely a blessing to you and to me. Because if we understand that, we understand the whole thing. Jesus knew his Father, trusted his Father, leaned into his Father, and he knew of the provision that would be there. We've been taught to go through trials, and when we don't have it the way we want it, we should complain, whine, don't forgive, be critical, be judgmental, talk down, be negative, show yourself to be negative. Show yourself to be an unbeliever. Isn't that what we get trained to do in society? Isn't it what we're trained to do in our lives? Isn't that what's flowing out of our hearts carnally that is at enmity with God? It's saying, I don't believe you, God. Well, I believe you, but you better answer right now. And the beautiful thing about a trial and the reason why patience doesn't work is because it bubbles all this stuff up and out. Choosing joy is not sticking your head in the sand and not seeing what's happening. And choosing joy is not pretending you feel some way you don't. That's not what choosing joy is. God gave you those emotions. The thing is, the emotions need to be tended to follow what's going on in the heart. And guess what emotions reveal? Exactly what's going on in your heart. Emotions bring it out in good ways and in negative ways, in godly ways and in sinful ways. But emotions basically are supporting and bringing out what's there. And what happens sometimes is that we go through trials, as we talk about having joy in our lives and the way we go through it, we will start to see the negativity. We'll start to see the fear. We'll start to see the greed. We'll start to see the selfish ambition. We'll start to see man-pleasing. We'll start to see things. And instead of really looking at what's going on and why, we run. We run from the moment. Now think about this. God sees you perfectly. And he has trials come in your life, or he allows trials to come in, however they come upon you. And it presents an opportunity to let something bubble up, let something boil out. God sees it as an opportunity for you and me to change. And we see it as an opportunity to say, why did you let this happen? What are you doing here? Get me out of this. Because what do we really want? We know this happens, but we don't want it. We don't want it ever happening in our lives. And God, if you were just so good, you could just get rid of this and not let this happen. We want to change in circumstances. And God wants a change in us. We're seeking for our circumstance to change. And God's saying, okay, but I want you to change. You know, there was a sign that used to be on the freeways a lot. It's prayer changes things. But I think the better line is prayer changes us. Prayer changes us because when the things aren't going well, the hope is that you and I would look to the God who made us, that we would come before him to pray, to seek his face, to seek his delight, to seek what pleases him. And in so doing, we change. I had an experience years ago. I was praying about a problem I had in business. I wanted this to go away. I didn't like things and the way they were working. It was causing trial and stress, and just things were happening. And I started praying, and I was being diligent to pray day after day after day. I was like, okay, a week, a month, 2 months, 3 months. God, why aren't you answering me? I call out to you because I want an answer. Give me the wisdom. I'll approach this, and nothing, nothing, nothing. After 6 months of praying regularly, fasting, calling out, finally one day, I'm praying about the problem. And I was like, why am I so upset about this? Why have I been praying about this for so long? And it was as God said to me, gotcha. I didn't need to change what was happening. I've changed you. You're not the same man anymore. All the prayer didn't change the circumstances. All the prayer changed you. And now you're in a place of maturity where you can deal with that. And I was like, oh, you got me. You totally got me. Like, I'm looking for a change of circumstances. God's looking for a change in me. And he got me. I'm like, you're so brilliant. You're so wise. How do you do these things? I love it. It's exciting because it helps you realize, yeah, count it joy. If your life is being perfected to come to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, and God is using these circumstances, the trials, the things that get thrown at us, say, everybody's getting them, guys. It's not strange. You're not unusual, right? Your dad walked out on you. Your dad mistreated you. Joanne was talking about abusive. You have alcoholic parents, drug addicted parents. You have people in your lives that do all manner of sin. It's going to happen. Nobody is kept apart from it. So accept that this is going to be part of life. And accept the fact that God is saying, this is part of it. But how are you going to look at it? Now we're getting over to choices. Because the way you see it is going to impact how you deal with it. And what if all of this that goes on in the world, when he says, count it all joy when you come into trials, don't think it a strange thing, is because he's trying to get you to see him and realize this doesn't compete. See, we can talk about death. Everybody knows the pain and the sorrow of death when you lose a loved one. Laundry can't compete with that. It just doesn't compete. But you know what? The death of a loved one can't compete with life everlasting given through Jesus Christ. It doesn't compete. Guess what? Jesus loves you, and he gives life. Guess what death leads to? He says in 1 Corinthians 15, don't you know unless you plant the seed, unless it dies, it's not going to come up to be what it's supposed to be? Don't you know that when you believe in me, you pass from death to life and do not enter into the judgment? And don't you know that even for your loved ones who you're wondering about, who might come up in that judgment, don't you know I'm on the mercy seat? I trust Jesus with all the judgment of everything that happens. And the beauty of that is that it allows me to have joy when I'm uncertain, when I'm doubting, when I'm unsure, when I have fear. Jesus is the judge. That is so awesome. He says here in 1 Peter 4, in verse 13, so it says, don't count it strange, verse 12, right? Things happen to you. They happen to everybody, guys. But look in verse 13, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy when his glory is revealed. You see, Jesus is putting us on a path to glory, and it's glory with him. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Jesus Christ. He's putting us on a path to glory. So when you realize that there's stuff that is going on in our lives that he is now going to take and work together for good, he's going to shape you and form you in a way that can last forever. Think about that. Bringing you to an incorruptible, immortal existence by his will. In Luke chapter 6, you remember what it says in Luke 6, verse 22, when Jesus is talking about things to be happy about. He says this in Luke chapter 6 and verse 22. Blessed are you when people hate you. How many of you feel that way? I'm so blessed. I have an employee that lives in North Carolina, and I always thought it was so nice when I was in the Carolinas and people were saying, God bless you. Bless your heart. And I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. And then she's like, that don't mean what you think it means. And I'm like, what do you mean? She said, oh, bless your heart means a whole bunch of things. You got to hear the tone on that. You think that's a good thing, and that ain't a good thing. She was basically verbalizing hate. She was like, yeah. And I didn't know this. So I went from a place of feeling blessed to feeling not so blessed. And then I'm like, oh, she hates me. I'm blessed. Right back to blessing. It all is a matter of the way you count it, the way you look at it. So Jesus says, look, blessed are you when men hate you. Oh, and when people exclude you. Woo! Yes! Blessings. Blessings when people don't include you and revile you. Okay. And cast you out. Your name is evil. For the Son of Man's sake. And notice Jesus says, rejoice in that day and leap for joy. For indeed your reward is great in heaven. For in like manners the fathers did to the prophets. Is this a different way of looking at it? Do you remember what, earlier I said, if you just get this one thing, if you can just kind of believe and see God in life, it's a total changer of your peace, your joy, your contentment. See, we need to see that God made us. And as we walk through life, come here, Juan. Yeah, I know Scott always picks on you, but come up here for me. Stand next to me. Juan, mi hermano. Dios te bendiga. Juan is a child of God. And what I want Juan to see, and I want you to see, is that life is a walk with a brother in Jesus and a father in Yahweh who walk with their arms around your shoulders, that wherever you go and whatever you do, they're right here for you. See, the faith that brings joy is saying, I realize he's right here like this. And what happens in trials... That's all right. You can cry. We're not having a joy thing this weekend. The truth is the Father is this close. He's right with you. And when you walk in your life, he's this close. And what we can fail to see is that when we are struggling with trials, we can say, God's not near. That's not true. If you are with him, he is with you. That is a promise in Scripture. You can claim it when you pray. God, you said, if I draw near to you, you draw near to me. You promise that you are with me if I am with you. Well, I'm with you right now. And seeing the reality of the walk and the closeness and the nearness changes the perspective. So when tragedy, trial, things come, it's all taken in the context. I'm with my brother, I'm with my father. And the care that he has for you and his strength is right next to you. You're in the midst of it. You're surrounded by it. So what is the trial? It is something to be endured with the Lord, having faith in who He is and having a belief in His love. Let me sit down. I want you to turn with me to Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 14. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 14. Zephaniah 3 and verse 14, it says, "Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel, be glad and rejoice with all your heart, O daughter of Jerusalem." Why? The Lord, Yahweh, and every time you see the four caps, it's Yahweh, Yehovah, Yehovah, not sure how to say it, but I know that's God's name. Wish it was there, but here it is. Yahweh has taken away your judgments. Sometimes when we're in that walk of intimacy with our father and with our brother and we sin, we think that God is looking to run away. And we're seeing, because we know sin is a divider, as it says in Isaiah 59, that somehow God is not there. But what does it say that Jesus, knowing our sins, came for us? And when we sin, in 1 John 2:1, that we have an advocate, one who is faithful, who intercedes on our behalf. And the reality of learning a faith in God's love for us is that even when we have gone astray, we're not running out of His arms. We're not forsaking Him. We're going to Him even in the midst of it, knowing that He is the one that can give us the answers, that He is the one who's a blessing, and that God's determined purpose is not to condemn you, to judge you, to put you in shame and guilt. Actually, everything He has done and what He is doing is to get you out of that spot. Everything is to refine you. Everything is to beautify you. Everything is for you, for the joy that was set before the Father, for the joy that was set before the Son, because He wants to make you into His image and He wants to enjoy life with you and me for all of eternity. Everything He's doing is to make us clean. So if you are one that had a father figure in your life or a mother figure that always was condemning, that's not your Father in heaven. Look at what it says of your Father. He says, "I will get away the judgment that's coming against you. I'll cast those away. I'll cast away your enemies." Why? The King of Israel, Yahweh, is in your midst. You shall see disaster no more. What a comfort that is in times of trial. To say, "I did well with my soul." Notice he says, "In that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, do not fear. Zion, don't let your hands become weak. Yahweh, your God, in your midst." He's right here with you. Where does joy come from? From the one who's in your midst. Don't you love it when you're with a person that's just filled with joy? You get those conversations. I'm looking at Kim right now because her husband, Chris, I love Chris. You can tell him I said that too. Chris is an awesome dude, but one of the things that's really special about Chris is he's just filled with joy. He just has a joy in his heart. He is a person I love my meetings. I look forward to the meetings with him because his joy, even if I'm feeling joyful, I have more joy all of a sudden because it's so contagious. And you know that feeling, right? When you're with a joy bringer and you're with them and they feel that way. Well, look what it says of God. He says, "Yahweh, your God, in your midst, the mighty one will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness." Do you have that vision of the Lord when you're walking with Him that you're His gladness? You're His joy. You are the delight of His eye, of His heart, that you, Marissa, are one that was chosen by Him and He delights in you. And you see that in the image of yourself, and you see what the Lord is speaking to you. Is He? That He loves you. He joys in you. And notice what else He does. You'll like this even more, Izzy. He quiets you with His love, and He'll rejoice over you with singing. Don't you love when you have kids and you just feel so much joy over your child and you just start singing to them? Everyone knows that. Is that the little kids have had that feeling, or maybe you've seen somebody doing that. I love watching parents. Scott and I were just looking out the window at the kids coming in today. It's like, look at that. Look at all that joy. Look at all that life. All these kids coming to Rock Valley today. It's so beautiful to see the families here. And it's just so awesome to see it. That's what God thinks of you. God's like, I love you. Let me quiet you with my love. You go through these things that come at you. He's like, they're coming. I got it, though. Let me quiet you with my love for you. So the question is, will you allow yourself to receive the joy that your Father in heaven has for you? Linda's all over it. She is shaking her head like a bobblehead. She's like, uh-huh, yes, I will. The question isn't whether God has joy in you. The question is whether you will receive the joy he has for you. This is the deceitfulness of sin in our lives, whether it's the sins we've done or the sins that have been done against us. We carry this baggage. We have these trials. We somehow think God is not involved. The world says, where was God? Why would a good God allow this to happen? And all these doubts and all these fears start going through, and they try to shake us away from the truth. But here is the truth. He loves you. He rejoices in you, and he wants to quiet you with that. The heart of God is to quiet. When Juan was up here and we're walking together, I want you to see God is the one who is quieting you. He's the one that's coming up to you and putting his arm around you. He is the one that is faithful and is always ever present. As much as you want him, he is there. And what he wants you to feel from him is his joy for you, his delight in you, his love for you. He wants you to feel him and the relationship with him, and have the faith in him that who he is and what he does, even death is no match. Death is no match for the love of God. And the last enemy that will be destroyed will be death, and he will put it on the run. Turn with me over to the book of Isaiah 65. In Isaiah chapter 65, it says this, in Isaiah chapter 65, and in verse 17, for behold, I create new heavens and a new earth. And the former shall not be remembered nor come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem as a rejoicing and her people as a joy. He says, my beloved son, my beloved daughter, in whom I'm well pleased. He says, well done, enter the joy of the Lord. The joy that begins with salvation, the joy that is our strength, the joy that we receive from him in life, the joy that comes from knowing his love, his faithfulness, his goodness, and his righteousness, the joy that comes from walking in his ways, from having fellowship in daily life with him. The joy was all about changing a people and making, creating a people of joy, with joy, for joy, his joy. What better thing can you imagine being created for? That the Creator who made you is completely engaged in you, his creation, and it's something to rejoice in that he has made you to be this. He says, so be glad and rejoice forever, in verse 18, for what I create. I'm creating Jerusalem a rejoicing, her people a joy. I, he says, will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people. The closer you are to the God who is making you to be a joy and delight in his eyes, the closer you are to the joy that's coming out of him, it becomes the joy that comes out of you. It becomes a peace when you shouldn't have it. It's a peace that passes understanding. It's a love when you are hated. It is a blessing when you're being cursed. It is having a different perspective of life, because all that can come in life, whether the things that come against us or the things that we're thinking about and dealing in our own lives, we're like, no, he's a joy bringer. I'm a joy bringer. And the more we receive of Him and receive of the joy that comes from God, the more that we have joy to give. Don't you see what's happening? That person might not know. They might be hating you. They might be persecuting. Don't you know that you're being refined through the process? And as you bless them, I also hear your prayer for them. I've always wondered how many people were praying for Saul before he became the Apostle Paul. How many people might have been offering up prayers that God would let him see the truth? And here he is with a witness and a testimony that goes beyond so many. Turn over with me to Psalm chapter 16. Psalm chapter 16. Psalm 16. Preserve me, O God, for in you I put my trust. Where does joy come from? Where does peace come from? Putting your trust and hope in Him. O my soul, you have said to Yahweh, you are my Lord. My goodness is nothing apart from you. May that always be that we find ourselves to pursue being in His midst, always having Him at our right hand. And He says, my goodness is nothing apart from you. As for the saints who are on the earth, they are the excellent ones in whom is all my delight. Look around the room. Do you have delight in the people that are in this room? I can tell you I do. I get to see all your faces right now, and it's awesome. And just knowing that God is working in your life and doing wonderful things in you. Do you realize what a treat this is for me that I even get to be in this place right now to share moments with you? You are the children of God. His joy is in you. His love is in you. It's just awesome to be here together in His presence and in your presence, because you will shine like the stars. You will live forever in His presence, and we will have exceedingly great joy because of Him. And He says, their sorrow shall be multiplied who hasten after another god. Their drink offerings of blood I will not offer, nor take their names on my lips. But who is He looking to? He's just saying, just turn to me. And he noticed, he says, O Yahweh, you are the portion of my inheritance and my cup. You are what I drink in of. You are what I receive. You are my everything and my delight. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. Yes, I have a good inheritance because my inheritance is not found on the earth. It's not dependent on what somebody does to me, because that's exhausting to try to deal with that. My joy is based on Him and Him alone. And because He's wrapping His arms around me and I'm in the midst, while I go through this and while I might sorrow and cry and have tears and I have pain, I know that He doesn't leave. And my peace and my joy is not based on what something is going on to me. And frankly, it's not even based on my own behavior, but that which He refines within me is He is God. And He says, David, let's walk this way. And he grabs me by the shoulder and says, this is where you need to be focused. This is where you need to go. This is what you need to do. And in all of that, there is this transformation of life. Do you want joy? Do you want peace? Do you want a breakthrough? It is only found in His midst. But that's it. You have to believe in Him and pursue Him and then believe what He says. When God says, I love you, I take joy in you, don't listen to the liars that tell you something different. Just acknowledge that's a lie. That's not the way God feels about us. And so he says, going on here, the lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. I just love that David wrote that line. Yes, I have a good inheritance. I will bless Yahweh who has given me counsel. My heart also instructs me in the night seasons. I have set Yahweh always before me, because He is at my right hand, and I shall not be moved. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. My flesh will rest in hope, for you will not leave my soul in Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Choose joy.